Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than Kent and former Yorkshire off-spin wizard, James Logan. So James, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things County Cricket. How's your day been so far, mate?
Good day so far, pretty chilled. Still in the off season, so I've just been for a light gym session today, and then just got home not too long ago. And just chilling out now, ready to do this.
Now, fair enough, James. And I have to ask out of interest, what constitutes a light gym session?
Nothing too intense. A few lower body today, so a few squats, a few things like that, a bit of core work to finish. So yeah, nothing too major,
but they're not very nice, are they, squats? And
no, I can't say I enjoyed it, but yeah, it's got to be done.
It does, yeah, it is. It's part and parcel of the game, isn't it? And that's why you're professional. Yeah. And the people who don't do squats and workouts such as myself are sat here talking about cricket instead of playing at the highest level. But talking of today's podcast then, just for the listeners out there, first of all, I'll be talking to James about his earliest cricketing memories up in Yorkshire. Then we'll have a large chunk of the discussion about Yorkshire and Kent County Cricket Club. And then James, if we can, if we've got time, we'll end today's podcast with a cheeky round of TCCP teammates, just to get to learn a little bit more about the characters that you share dressing room with at the Spitfire Ground in Canterbury. But before we get into all of that good stuff then, James, I want to transport you all the way back to the origin of the James Logan cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
So my early memories are, so my brother is 6 years older than me. So he started playing when I think he must have been 12. And I just followed him down and when he was training and stuff, just used to mess around. I think I was six at the time. And then, I just didn't really, I wasn't signed up or anything. And then I remember when I was seven, and literally I lived like 50 yards up the road from the local club. And there were one like Saturday morning when they used to do the like under nine cricket festivals. The coach like walked up to my house and he knocked on my door and he was like, "Oh, we're short. Does James want to play?" To my mum. And she was like, "Yeah, but he's got like no kit." All I had were like the Slazenger sets that you used to get from JJB. So I had one of them. So I had my bat were like a Harrow size. So the bat were like nearly bigger than me. And he said, "Yeah, I'll come down and play." And then the next thing was that I had no like whites. So basically they had some, my local club's called Altos, so they had a shirt, but then I had no white trousers. So I ended up playing in my, the only white trousers I had were my pyjamas. So I ended up playing the festival in my pyjama bottoms and my Altos shirt that I was given. And I actually, I remember like just enjoying it straight away. And then, I ended up signing on after that and actually buying some cricket kit.
I'll tell you what, James, that has to be the most unique journey to cricket we've had on the podcast. Playing in your pyjamas. We have not, we haven't heard that.
And I think they were just like white, like almost like jogger material. And obviously then I got given the shirt. So actually, they weren't too far off cricket. They didn't look too far out from cricket wise.
So it didn't, it wasn't so apparent that it was absolutely blaringly obvious, but
no, maybe it was, maybe my memories, I'm just trying to make it sound better in my head.
Yeah, everyone else at the club was likewise James playing in his pyjamas.
Yeah, probably.
That is brilliant. And again, to quote a very cliche phrase, but that's so village. It really is. Yeah. That's why we love the game,
100%,
isn't it? 100%. The stories like that. Imagine doing that in first class cricket. They'd be booted out.
Yeah. You'd be laughed off the pitch.
Probably wouldn't make it to the pitch at that point. But in terms of those early years then, James, in terms of those real formative years in the game of cricket, who were your role models? Who were your idols in the world of cricket, either in the professional or indeed the international stage beyond that, were there anybody in the professional game that you looked up to and tried to emulate in those early years, per se?
Yeah, so I remember when we were, me and my brother were young, my parents used to take us to Yorkshire to watch, like, when it were the Pro 40 competition. And they used to have, like, Michael Vaughan, Darren Lehman at the time, like Hoggard and stuff like that. So that were like, we used to go, like, literally watch every game of that, like T20s or Pro 40s. And then obviously the 2005 Ashes, that's when I was like really starting to get like interested in cricket. And the only really cricketer in my family, like my parents, like are not into it at all, but my granddad used to go to his and watch like the 2005 Ashes, and obviously that was just the like pinnacle of cricket. So I remember getting like hooked at the time, and just all I wanted to do then was just like be down there like messing around with a wind ball or whatever all the time down at my club.
Well, it's a very, that's more of a familiar way into cricket, in particular the 2005 Ashes. That's just out of my range. And I always hate saying that on the podcast, but it is, I can't lie. My first series that I watched Ashes-wise was 2009. And it was that game in Cardiff, the Great Escape, as it was coined, with Jimmy and Monty Panesar. But because we brought up the 2005 Ashes, it is tradition here on the Counter Cricket podcast to ask a follow-up question, shall we say. And that is, James, if you could go back to that series, 2005 Ashes, and relive just one moment from that iconic series, what moment would you choose and why?
I'd say that I remember the one that's probably most memorable is Harmison getting that last wicket when I think Geraint Jones like diving catch it forward. Yeah, that one. That when you watch it back on, it's always on what's the program called, like Sky's, that they put on Sky, like
Cricket Grace. Classics.
Yeah, Cricket Classics. That one's always on, and you just know what's going to happen, but you just like watch it every time.
It's
a classic.
It is. It's a fantastic moment, isn't it? The wicket of Michael Kasperwich, the Aussie tail end of one which the Aussies say didn't glove. Englishmen will always say, yes, glove. Yeah, clear glove.
Definitely.
Not just a little tickle, massive glove. Definitely glove that, didn't he, Kasperwich? Yeah. And a great 100%. Take, as you said, by Geraint Jones, funnily enough, at my local ground of Edgbaston. That was a fantastic test match, a great, great series as well, as we continually mention. And so many fantastic names as well, weren't there, from both sides. Yeah. The Australia team were absolutely stacked. And I suppose, as I mentioned, when it comes to role models, were there any real role models in that series? A common one here on the podcast seems to be Freddie Flintoff. He seems to appear every single time. But aside from Freddie, or even including Freddie, were there any in that series that kind of captured the imagination?
Yeah, I wouldn't say like role models, but obviously you just remember watching Kevin Peterson getting the battles. And obviously I used to love watching like Brett Liebel, just because I used to love his like bowling action. And obviously it were all action when he were bowling. So yeah, that's why when I first started, I probably were trying to bowl like as fast as I could like him at one point. But yeah, that didn't work out.
Yeah, that's quite common, isn't it? And we spoke about this before the podcast, and it is a very common occurrence here in England and Wales, and that is the transition of being a failed seamer into becoming an off-spinner. So I suppose in those most formative years, James, you were a seamer. Who did you try? Yeah. Were you a Brett Lee style?
Our left arm. I don't even know.
Zahir Khan.
I just used to spray it in all directions, like literally no control. It was a good decision to give that up in the end.
Yeah, again, that's something I can very much relate to. I'm also a felt seamer. It's one of those, isn't it, at the end of the day. But I will say this, ever since going into off-spin, I love it. I love the art of off-spin, and this brings us nicely onto our conversation about the art form. And I always liken the two. When it comes to seam bowling, it's the rock and roll star, isn't it? It's the one which everyone kind of looks at. It gets you on the edge of your seat. But spin bowling, there's something magical about it in terms of the way you can outfox a batsman. You can single-handedly change the entire complexion of a game with some good spin bowling, whether that's by building pressure or getting a wicket. Look at Mataima Ralitharan. I think back to the 2006 series against England. Oh, he had our batsman on absolute strings, absolute master of the craft. But James, I have to ask really, because you were a failed seamer in quotation marks, why did you go into off-spin? Why didn't you become a wicketkeeper or a specialist batsman?
So at the time, really, so I was, I think I was playing for, so I was playing for Yorkshire under-11s as like a batter, and my seam wasn't good enough to bowl, so I was in the team as a batter. And then I didn't score many runs that first year for Yorkshire under-11s, so I started the under-12s in the like Yorkshire B team. And they literally didn't have a spinner at all, like not one spinner. And I was captain at the time. So I just started, I had practiced it in the nets, but I just used to like bring myself on and bowl a few overs. And then like, I think I like won like the bowling award that year. Cause I was just getting quite a few wickets every time I brought myself on. And then, yeah, ever since then, after that season, I worked on it all winter, and then I've slowly my batting, my bowling went like in front of my batting, so I'm obviously more of a bowler now. When in my like early years, I was always like a batter.
It's an interesting way into the art of spin bowling, isn't it? I mean, it's not ridiculously uncommon. It's one which I did as well. Fair enough, without the shred of batting talent, I'm still averaging about 11. That's never going to improve, but. And that's mainly because of the nice thick edges on my bare cricket bat, to be honest, you know, racing it away to the boundary. But I love spin bowling. They do all count. Exactly. Same with wickets. Same with wickets as a fellow member of the Spinners Union. It's so true, isn't it? You can bowl brilliantly and then you bowl an absolute rank full toss and you get a wicket.
Yeah, it's cow corner still counts as a wicket, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it certainly does. Yeah. And when the batsmen do miscue a full toss and it goes straight to the man at mid on or mid off. Yeah, they all count. They all count, no matter how strange they are. But in terms of the art form itself, James, what is your favourite aspect of spin bowling? What is it about the actual art itself which has kept you so engrossed with it over the years?
I think like there's never been a time when I haven't like when I've just been like, oh, I'm like happy with where my game's at. Like I just want to keep it now. I've always been working on like the next thing, and then try and nail that, and then there's always something else that you'll watch yourself bowl on video and you'll be like, all right, that like that could be better, like you compare it to some of the, like this is what I do anyway, like I'll like I'm always watching other spinners, like successful spinners around the county and international, because we have like a nice like website where we can watch all the like literally every ball of any game, which is like good. So I'm always like, I probably spend too much time on there, like watching other successful spinners, and I'm like, what are they doing different to, like, could I copy something they're doing to like improve my game? And yeah, I'm all, like, I can't remember the last time like I ever thought like, oh, I don't want to be working on something. Like I'm just always like looking to, there's always something to do to improve.
Well, there is, yeah. And that's the thing about spin as an art form, which I think non-spinners don't quite appreciate. It really does take years to hone the craft. It's not like seam bowling. With seam bowling, you can get 19, 20, 21-year-olds and they'll break through onto the circuit or indeed the international stage beyond, because you can do that. If you've got the speed, if you've got the raw talent, you can make it pretty early in seam. But when it comes to spin bowling in particular, it does take many more years to properly develop. And this is something which I've always said in this country, I still don't think we quite fully appreciate, because you look at people in the international stage right now, and I always go to the example of Rashid Khan. Another one is Mujibur Rahman from Afghanistan. And these are young spinners who have got ridiculous talent. They have got generational talent. In particular, Rashid Khan, he's been doing it since he was 17, 18 years of age and has dominated franchise cricket, county cricket as well for Sussex, and international cricket for Afghanistan. But the problem is, not every spinner who's 19, 20 or 21 is going to be that good. It takes time. And the research which actually suggests this displays that the majority of spinners, both leg spinners and off spinners, reach the peak of their powers. They mature properly at the age of 27 or 28. And
I've always thought heard that.
You agree with that, James?
Well, like you say, I've heard like people talk about that, and obviously some of the best spinners that we've seen on the county circuit, like Jeeton and Simon Armour, are obviously they're a bit older, but to obviously hit the prime. Like I don't know if Simon Armour's even at his prime yet. He just keeps getting more and more wickets. So obviously, like you say, that probably supports what you're saying.
Well, it does. And even look at the current international circuit. Look at Adil Rashid, for example. Rash didn't come onto the scene when he was like 20, 21 years of age. He's now properly at the height of his powers in the late 20s, where the majority of spinners do mature. Same with Tabrez Shamsi. Adam Zampa is a great one as well. I remember him in the Big Bash, for example, used to be pretty inconsistent at times, had raw talent. But I'll tell you what, in the last 2-3 years, Adam Zampa, he's a magician. He's taken 5-for-19 against Bangladesh today. Played for Essex in the county circuit. So if you are a young spinner, don't get dispirited, okay? Don't get disheartened if you don't necessarily master the art form just yet, because it does take time. And once you do master it, and you do look at the Muralees, the Rangana Harraths, you know, the real great spinners of this world, it's incredible, isn't it, James?
Just watching people like that. Obviously, it's just different level, isn't it? One that we all aspire to get to.
It is, yeah, it is. And listeners, if you can't tell already, I think it's pretty obvious we're both part of the Spinners Union, both absolute spin badgers here. And every single time I do get a spinner on, as I said, I do take great fascination and interest in the art form, because I love learning about it as well. Don't get me wrong, like I'm certainly not a good spinner, but I like doing my best. And the fact is, you do learn some great tidbits and nuggets of information. So I always find it quite interesting. And actually, James, just one more question about off spin before we go on to talk about your action, which I do want to ask about. In terms of the art form itself, what do you think is the most pivotal weapon of the spinner's arsenal? In particular, off spin, do you think it's drift, flight, turn? What do you think it is that really does make a successful off spinner?
I've always like built my bowling around, like, first of all, the main thing I want is to be consistent. I want to know, like, I can like pitch the ball like same place like 6 times in an over, and not like give a batter like a freebie to let the pressure off. So that's always been like probably one of my main strengths. Just like almost being boring in how like you'll just be prepared to bowl the same ball over and over again and not get bored and try and bowl a magic ball. So that's obviously the drift and the spin, like that comes with like once you perfect your craft and stuff like that, and obviously pitch dependent and stuff like that. So, but no matter what the pitch is or what the weather conditions are like or anything, like I think being able to be consistent is always going to, like, you're going to need that every time you bowl. And if you don't have that, like you're gonna end up leaking boundaries, because the margin for error for a spinner is obviously a bit less than a quick seamer. I think main thing for me has always been like being able to bowl consistent.
100%, I'd agree with that. And in fact, that has been a common theme actually with left arm off spinners. Funnily enough, Liam Patterson White said the exact same thing, as did Callum Parkinson on one of our more recent episodes as well, because it is so important. And again, this is what differentiates the village spinners, such as myself, and the first class spinners, and that is consistency, because anyone with the right amount of practice can turn a cricket ball. It's not immensely hard, but it's consistency. It's about doing that reliably, knowing where to pitch it, the right lengths as well, and that's what takes years to craft. It's not the actual spinning. It's about knowing when to spin it, how much to spin it by, and of course, judging conditions to utilize to your advantage. So I would agree with that, James. And actually, just I keep on saying one more, we'll be here all day talking about spin at this rate. But when it comes to your style of spin, I always look at two archetypes when it comes to off spinners. You've got your aggressors. So I look at the likes of Danny Briggs, for example, in T20 cricket, bowls a bit more stump to stump, right? Yeah. Tries and takes wickets. And then at the same time, you've also got the pressure builders. The ones, and Imad Wazim is a great example of this, Chris Green for Middlesex this season, who just really tie up an end. Which of those archetypes do you think that you fit into, per se?
Obviously, white ball. I would more or less like my game plan's normally to go wicket to wicket, and obviously if I bowl in the power play, usually like can get a bit of assistance with like the ball being a bit newer, so you get a bit of drift and stuff like that. So yeah, and then like red ball wise, I'd say like, yeah, I just probably like more the other way. Like I'll just try and especially like first innings, if you're not getting, if the pitching giving you much assistance, like just try and go at like 2-3 and over. And sometimes you can, well, a lot of the time you can just, if you're consistent for a few overs, like you'll end up getting given a wicket, because more or less, well, especially like my experience playing club cricket and stuff like that, like batters get bored quickly, and they'll end up playing like a rash shot or something like that.
Yeah, that is spot on. I can relate to that this season, actually. That's how I got a couple of my wickets.
Yeah, they're the most satisfying ones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, there is a fine margin as well between, you know, they're missing it and you're going into the car park. So
yeah. Well, that can happen. That's just it's just a standard thing that spinners have to deal with, don't they?
It is, yeah. That is another thing when it comes to aspiring spinners out there. You are going to get carted sometimes. It's just part and parcel because... Again, yeah. Some people won't take on seam, but as soon as they see the speed dip, they like to fill their boots and go after you. But again, it's all about resilience, fortitude, and getting one over on them. So again, some important lessons to learn for any young spinners out there. And talking of your spin bowling, James, again, for anyone who's watched you bowl spin, you do have a relatively unique action. I'm going to be honest, I quite like it, to be fair.
Thanks.
So, because again, when it comes to cricket in general, like I say the same thing about batting as well. I know a lot of people disagree, but I like Dom Sibley's technique and Roy Burns and Fawad Alam's. Fawad Alam's fantastic. Chander Paul as well, when he used to face pretty much with his back to the bowler. I mean, how crazy was that? But I like individuality when it comes to batting and bowling techniques. So I suppose the question I have to ask, have you always had that action? Is that your natural action or is that developed over time?
No, sir. So when I first started bowling spin, I used to like running basically, whereas opposed to now I like more of a walking. But yeah, like I've just obviously year on year, I've been bowling spin for like 10 years now. Like every winter, like I've been tinkering with my technique and stuff like that, and it's ended up where I am now. But I only changed to like how I approach crease now, like probably 3 seasons ago. And like, I'm not sure, like I can't actually remember like where my arms going out to each side, like when that came in. But obviously now, like if I try ball and not do that, like it just feels so weird. So like, I don't think it's going to like go anytime soon. But obviously, the stuff that I'll be working on this winter that I've already like identified, like little things. But yeah, I don't think my like actual overall like way I approach the crease or stuff like that will be changing anytime soon, because it just feels too weird to change it.
Yeah, that is the problem. Over time, you get accustomed to it, don't you? I mean, another one that I can think of. It's not so much the arms being out wide, but in particular, the front arm is so straight, and that's Mitchell Santner. It is arrow sharp. Like, he does not move it. It's so rigid.
Yeah.
So, again, it's up to the individual, isn't it? It's individuality. Again, we all have our different actions, techniques, and to be honest, it's worked. And in fact, this takes us nicely onto our conversation about county cricket, because with the action and from all of those formative years, you know, learning the craft of spin bowling, it all came together, didn't it, when you made your debut for Yorkshire County Cricket Club. So, James, in terms of that day for you, what do you remember from the debut itself, and how momentous of an occasion was that for you personally to represent your home county?
So my debut was, I think, 2018 or 19. It were for Yorkshire County Championship game away at Worcester. And I'd been bowling well in the second team a few weeks leading up to it. So I got told a couple of weeks before that I had a chance, and it was the last game of the season. And then I were in the squad. I think it were actually like the first squad I'd got in. Like I'd never been in the squad and like just missed out and had to run drinks or whatever. It was like the first squad I got in. And then, yeah, I think the night before, well, the day before, I got told that I was playing, and then obviously my heart was racing. And I remember our rooming with, well, back when we used to be able to actually room with someone, we were on his own now, but I was rooming with Matthew Waite, and I don't think he was actually playing the game, but we're actually like really close friends, and it was good to like just chat about it with him. I remember chatting with him that night before the game and stuff, and but obviously then the next morning when I had the ball in my hand, my feelings were a bit different. But yeah, it was like once you got that first over in or whatever, yeah, you're just into the game now. And it ended up my first ball were at Marine Alley, so it wasn't the I could have picked a better batter that I'd rather have bowled at my first ball, but yeah
Marine Alley, an excellent batsman, it has to be said, great bowler as well, one of England's finest for the past decade. And he got you out in that game, didn't he?
Yeah, still not sure, a bit of a close LBW, but yeah, might have just been out. But yeah, he hit me for a couple of sixes too, so I had nothing to thank him for after that, David. But yeah, it went all right, it was a crazy game, like what ended up happening, and we won in 3 days, and then it was the last game of the season, so it was just like all systems were a go after the finish, and yeah, we were in the changing room for like few hours after, and then yeah, it was quite a big night actually.
Am I right in thinking this may be the wrong game, but Jack Brooks started teeing off?
Yeah,
was it that one?
So I actually batted, yeah, it was. So I batted 9, and Brooksy batted 10. And I went out and batted because Gary Balance, I think he got like 190 odd in the end. And I batted with Gary for a good while, to be fair, but like I didn't get many.
6 from 36, 16.66 strike rate.
Yeah, that sounds about right for me. and then, yeah, I just remember like just taking my pads off and stuff, and next thing you know, Brooksy was just sending it to all parts. Just a crazy, like the whole partnership was just like we were probably behind in the game, and then next thing you know, we were 100, I don't know how many lead we ended up getting, but it was just them two probably put on 200 or something for the 9th wicket. So yeah, and then we ended up bowling them out within 3 days. So yeah, it were a good game to make your debut.
Yeah, not bad at all. And as I said, that was just hilarious. It was that game.
Yeah, Brooks. I think actually Marine Alley ended up getting Jack Brooks out, but you were bowling seam.
I remember that. Yeah, it's been on social media.
Yeah, that was.
He was in. Wasn't he wearing black socks? Oh, he's wearing funny coloured socks as well.
Yeah, but that's like just shows how like long them two batted together that it came to that he came on bowling seam.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that was quite a funny game actually. That, to be fair, I didn't realise that was the same one. You're right.
Yeah, same game. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's flown by, flipping heck. That's wow. 4 seasons ago now.
Yes, that's a while ago.
Wow, an iconic moment in recent county cricket history.
Definitely.
And talking of another iconic moment, I suppose. Well, this is iconic for me because I remember this game very, very vividly. Because again, this was another crazy game from your time at Yorkshire. And that was the game against my beloved Bears up at York Cricket Club. Now, this was a staggering game. It really was. And James, I think you'll be able to describe it better than me, given the fact that you experienced it firsthand. But
yeah,
what do you remember from that crazy encounter?
I don't know if you've ever been to York, but it's just like, it's like a really nice club ground, but I never expected like to play a county game there. And then obviously they put a few stands up, and like it were all very like tight to the pitch. So like the atmosphere like at the game were like a bit different to what I've experienced in other county championship games, because they were like a full like ring of crowd around the whole ground. There weren't like parts of the ground that are empty. So yeah, I just remember it were like really like good like atmosphere and stuff like that. And it were, yeah, obviously the result didn't quite go as way in the end, but yeah, it were really like good week to obviously for myself just to be back playing first in the first team after a couple after a year or so. And then yeah, it were just unfortunately we just couldn't quite get over the line in the end.
Well, unfortunate for some and unfortunate for
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Depending on who you support. I mean, from my perspective, maybe a bit different. We won by 3 wickets, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Gtam, I think, scored the winning runs. And I remember as well in that game, I'm pretty sure it was Ollie Hannon-Dorby took like 8 or 9 wickets as well. He was absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah. I remember going out to bat in the first innings. I was facing him and he was causing me all sorts of problems. Like, you were like, obviously, I'm a left-hander, so he was like pushing a few across, and then he'd like ball a big in-swinger. And then at the other end, you had Jeter spinning it a yard, so it wasn't the easiest.
No, I can imagine a baptism of fire when it comes to those two, the Owl and Jeets. My goodness, I wouldn't fancy that combination. Jeets used to play at York as well, club cricket.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah, what a game that was. And that honestly, that was the first time that I really took notice of you, to be honest, James, in the county circuit, because in that game, I have actually got the specific figures now, but there were some crazy batting displays in that particular match. And this was a good bowling display, 4 for 22. And I have to ask, do you remember who those 4 wickets were?
Yeah, 100%, because they were my first. Rob Yates were my first-class wicket. Then I think it was the order was Sibley next, and then Hose, and then Lamb, I think.
Yeah, it was spot on.
And then I think Miles came in, and obviously I on a fifer, and I think he like went back, played me off the back foot, and it ended up like, I think it like hit the ground and then like hit the stumps, but it didn't knock the bales off. So that would have been my like fifer, and obviously like at the time I was just happy to get 4, but now looking back on it I was like, I wish that could have just hit the bales a bit hard.
Yeah, it's a cruel game, isn't it, sometimes cricket. You see that, we've seen that a couple of times in the T20 World Cup, haven't we?
Against
seam bowlers as well. I don't know why on earth that's happened, but it's cruel sometimes, isn't it? Really is. Feels like you've been robbed of a wicket.
Yeah, but obviously overall, like, it was a bit of a weird, feeling after the game, because I was like, obviously I got my first, like, that was the first time I'd done like well at that level, so I was like, got to prove to myself that I could do it. But on the other hand, we'd lost, and the mood in the dressing room like wasn't too good. So,
Yeah, they're always difficult, aren't they? It's the exact same thing, I suppose, when you score a century and your team loses, because you've got the individual pride, you've got the milestone, but at the same time, your team's lost, everyone's a bit down, aren't they? So
yeah.
It's a very strange and different atmosphere, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
You're there, you know, meant to be feeling proud and everyone else is, you know, a little bit disappointed, but it's one of those, again, comes back to that phrase, it's part and parcel of the game, isn't it? Cricket's a funny one.
It's a, like you say, funny sport.
It is, but it's a fantastic sport at that. And yeah, in my opinion, my incredibly unbiased opinion, arguably the best one ever invented. But again, take that with a pinch of salt from the host of the County Cricket Podcast. James, in terms of your time at Yorkshire, though, I suppose we have to talk about the ending slightly, because you did get released by the club. And if you're able to, I would just like to know a little bit more about this, because at the time, and I mentioned this here on the podcast about a year ago, when did you find out you're going to be released? Because when we heard that news, in particular me, because I'd seen you play against us at York, I was very, very surprised by that. So how did that, you know, come about, I suppose?
Yeah, so it was like, I don't know if it started like after that game at York, they ended up, it were already pre-agreed, but that Maharaj was signing. So obviously I was out of the team then and didn't play all that for the rest of the year, because I think that game at York quite early in the season, and then the next season obviously was the COVID hit season, and so obviously we when we came back from COVID, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if I sort of got like them vibes straight away that like maybe I want in the plans. And then obviously a few weeks went on and I wasn't playing or anything like that. I got the first, like, they give me the first indication that they were trying to sign someone, and if they could, then it'd probably be, well, it was going to be me who won't get in, like, my contract renewed. And then obviously that was just the worst news I could have got at the time. And then a couple of weeks went past and I got called in again, and they were like, yeah, we've been like made aware that we can sign him. So yeah, that was the end of my time.
Was that very difficult to take? Because that is your boyhood county, it's your home county as well. And as I said, there was nothing, at least from where I was, you know, sat from a neutral position. And I said this as well about Worcestershire spinner Ben Tuhig. I said it about him as well. I could not understand why you two had been released. And I've said that again this season with Worcestershire, actually, with Alex Milton. So hopefully that won't be a pattern for the West Midlands county. But how did you take that news?
I'm not going to lie. Like, the first, like, the winter war, obviously, because I probably ended up leaving in the end of September. But I knew a bit before that, but I carried on training. I did a bit of stuff with Birham. But then I got told that, like, they weren't in a position to like offer me a contract. So then it was like, almost that reality of people have always known you as a professional cricketer, and then suddenly you're not. It was quite tough. It probably wasn't the most enjoyable time in my life or my cricket career, to be honest.
No, it's always incredibly tough, isn't it? It really is. It's a common theme here on the podcast, because when you do get released, after so much hard work, and this is what I don't think some fans realise, and I think that we do have to realise, it's not just a few hours a week. It's hours and hours and hours for weeks, months, years. It's thousands of hours have gone into that. So much hard work. And then to get that phone call or to have that meeting, it's soul-destroying. It really is. That's the way that I'd describe it, to be honest. But after that winter, and again, where you would have had the disappointments, the upset from that, on comes 2021.
Yeah.
And I suppose pastures are new down in the southeast of England at Kent County Cricket Club. And I said this, again, this is on the podcast, because I always like it when players come back into the circuit. I said this about Simon Kerrigan as well. Really see him back, kegs at Northants. But it was good to see you back, and it was good to see you back for Kent. And I suppose I have to ask, how did that move materialise? When did you find out you're going to be a Kent player?
Yeah, so at the start of the season, I trialled a bit at Worcester. I did all right, but like nothing, like didn't like blow any doors down. Like, it wasn't like amazing. Sort of got the feeling that they probably weren't going to go anywhere. At that point, like that was probably like a month and a half into the season. Or maybe like 2 months. And at that point, like, I was starting to think, like, I don't know if it's going to happen or not. And then I think Yorkshire played Kent at Headingley in a county championship game. And I think there were like some sort of like dinner or event on, where like a lot of the board members were there from both teams, I think. I'm not exactly sure what it was. And I think one of the board members, it was Jeff Cope. Spoke to Paul Downton. Maybe it wasn't Paul, maybe someone who knew Paul. And he basically just, well, they said they were looking for a left-arm spinner. And then obviously my name got passed. Paul Downton, the director of cricket at Kent, give me a text that same day. And he was like, yeah, we'll get you down to come play some twos cricket in a couple of weeks. It just went from there. It was actually good that I had a bit of time to like prepare for it. It wasn't just like, oh, we want you to come down tomorrow. It was like, I actually had a bit of time to get ready.
obviously, yeah, it does make a difference, doesn't it? As opposed to, you know, impromptu, yeah. Come down here,
yeah,
with no practice, with no advance warning. So,
yeah,
I think it's safe to say as well that that move has paid off. And in terms of the club itself, Kent County Cricket Club, one of the most illustrious in the country, really. And they've won the championship on multiple occasions. They're the holders now of the T20 Blast as of 2021. What were your first impressions of the club itself, of Canterbury and the Spitfire Ground?
Well, my first impressions were that when we played my first trial game in the second team were Sussex away at Hove. So it was a pretty long drive for a 2020 game. So I drove all the way down to Brighton, and then like their team, it was just before the Blast started. So their team were like just the 2020 team, like Salt Wright, everyone. We batted first, and I didn't bat. I think we only got like 130, and then they're like, "All right, you're opening the bowling." So my first ball in like a Kent shirt was to Phil Salt, and he just hit me back over my head for six. And I thought, oh no, like I've done this drive, like, and I've just like, that couldn't have started any worse. But then I ended up bowling like really well after that. And then, yeah, they got me back down, and then I ended up playing again. But yeah, like the whole like atmosphere in the dressing room, and like the lads, it's different to Yorkshire. But yeah, like all the lads, like as soon as I turned up at training the first day, were like all so welcoming. And it was just real easy to fit in like straight away. I knew Jack Leaning, obviously from Yorkshire, and he really helped like early on when I was just, I was just in hotels for like the first month or two. And he was just like washing my kit and stuff, obviously, at his house. People like that really helped out them first few months when you're just trying to settle in.
It's always helpful, isn't it? When you do have, you know, I suppose familiar faces there with Jack as well. Yeah. He made the exact same move, didn't he? And has just signed a contract extension as well, which is
good
news
really
for
well.
Kent fans.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, again, it is nice. It's nice. And there is one person in the Kent dressing room, I think we all know who I'm going to mention here, but
yeah,
he is, of course, the GOAT himself, Mr. Darren Stevens. What was it like meeting the great man for the first time in a dressing room environment?
I mean, it's just like weird, because obviously it's weird from like going to like seeing people on obviously like TV or whatever. You've seen a lot of them, but you've never actually met them. And then you meet them, and they're just like, they're just normal guys, like Steve-O, like he's just, so like you wouldn't know that he's like does what he does. Like he doesn't, not that I've seen anyway, like he doesn't ever like brag, or like he's not big-headed about it or anything like that. He's just a normal guy.
And that's the thing, I've always noticed that in cricket, to be honest, not just with the podcast as well. A few years ago I went to play some golf actually here in the West Midlands, and I could not believe it was on the same range. Ian Bell's the exact same one, right? And this is one of England's greatest ever players. Okay, one of my absolute all-time favourites. The cover drive alone makes Ian Bell worth it 100%. But I remember just looking at him there, just for a minute, like, you know, just processing, that's Ian Bell. That is my favourite ever batsman there.
Yeah.
And said a brief hello to him. He was so normal. It's unbelievable, isn't it? When you meet cricketers, it's not like footballers.
I don't think I've met any footballers, but yeah,
I can imagine
that, yeah, some of them are a bit different. But yeah, like you say, like even when I went into, like when I first went into like the Yorkshire room, and the same there, like big names that you'd grown up like watching on the TV or even at the games, and then suddenly you're just like in a dressing room and you're just having like normal day-to-day conversation with them. So it's actually like quite weird at the start.
It is. That's how I found the podcast as well. Maybe not the, you know, there's so much day-to-day conversations, but at the same time, because you do form some preconceptions about certain cricketers, and you think you know what they're like, and then that gets completely shattered
Yeah.
But in a good way, as I said, the county circuit is full of very decent blokes, at least from our experiences, at least. So
yeah,
it is nice, actually. That's why I do like cricket, as opposed to other sports, as I said.
Yeah.
Decent people in the circuit. And I suppose, James, in retrospect, now that the 2021 season has come to an end, you are going to be a Kent player in 2022 as well. So congratulations for that, first and foremost. But how would you put the 2021 season into your own words? How would you describe your experiences in the Southeast?
Yeah, just amazing. Like I said earlier, I thought I would just completely, I didn't see where my next opportunity were coming. And then all of a sudden, all happened so quickly. I was playing the first Blast game. It was just obviously that was just amazing. I've been able to contribute a few more times on the line, and I've played, I don't know how many games I've played, probably over 10 in all formats, which it's just been just so thankful to them for obviously trusting me and giving me an opportunity. And obviously it all came to a head at the end of the season when it finished at finals day, and you couldn't have really wrote a better way for it all to finish like that. The whole day were just amazing, and it just topped off an unbelievable season for myself and obviously for Kent.
Yeah, finals day was special this year. I was there for the first time ever as well. It was my first ever finals day, very much a neutral fan, although on the podcast I did say that Sussex were going to win, so I got that completely wrong. But hey, it's T20 cricket, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But what a final that was, and what a day it was. I mean, it started off with Josh Davey hitting that six, which was incredible against Hampshire. Then we had that semi-final between Sussex and Kent. And I'll tell you what, the Kent fans, I went down for the quarter-final in Canterbury between the Bears and the Spitfires, which didn't exactly go our way, shall we say, from a Bears perspective. But the Kent fans, very partisan, very vocal. I found that when it comes to the Southeast, and of course at finals day as well. They're making so much noise, but I'll tell you what, fair play. And at the end, it paid off. Their support paid off. Kent won, lifting the trophy for the first time in 14 years. Yeah. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah. And I suppose, James, looking forward to 2022 now, with the return of two divisions in the county championship, Kent will be in Division 1. So our two teams will be getting familiar yet again, as we did in 2019 and 2018. We seem to play each other a lot, actually. In football cricket, Warwickshire and Kent. looking forward to next season, what are your future aspirations with the club, not just for 2022, but beyond, both from an individual and a club standpoint?
Yeah, so I think, well, personally, I just want to keep doing everything, working hard to keep improving. And obviously with that, I'll come, hopefully, a more responsible role in the team. And obviously, I hope... especially next year, it's just about trying to play as many games as I can and contributing as much as I can when I get the opportunity. And then obviously, in the future, like got a taste for it last year with the Blast and stuff. I don't think there's anything better than winning trophies, especially like how big that one is and stuff like that. So I won't mind doing that a few more times. That's obviously the goal moving forward. I want to be a part of the team, and hopefully it'll be a winning team.
Well, I'll tell you what, James, I think it goes without saying, but wishing yourself and of course Kent the very best of luck. Maybe not so much against Warwickshire again. Hey, maybe next time let's go through to finals day. Let us experience a home finals day for the first time since 2017. But no, wishing yourself the very, very best of luck, mate. As I said, great to see you back in the circuit. Really is fantastic. And hopefully many more years to come, because it is fantastic. Really is. And James, just before we end today's podcast, I did allude to it right at the beginning. We do have a tradition here on the County Cricket Podcast when it comes to current players, and that is, of course, TCCP teammates. So just for the new listeners out there, in front of me, I've got an assortment of questions. There aren't too many, James, so don't worry. But I have got some questions in front of me, which all relate to the characters that you share a dressing room with at the Spitfire Ground in Canterbury. So, James Logan, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I'm ready.
Fantastic. The first one, a classic here on TCCP. Who's the teacher's pet at the Spitfire Ground? Who's always hanging around the coaches?
Oh, my God. That's a tough one to start. Right, I've got a reason for it. Like, I'd have to say, so Zach Crawley and Mike Yardy, they're obviously batting coach. They're very tight. I'm not saying he's a teacher's pet, but obviously they just spend a lot of time working together. So yeah, that's the only one I can get off the top of my head.
I think that's an apt choice, actually. Having listened to some descriptions of Zach with England as well, he seems to be, you know, he likes learning off coaches, doesn't he?
Yeah, he works like very hard on his batting. Like, you probably, well, he spends the most time in the nets that I've seen any player do since I've been playing. And a lot of that swing, Mike Yardy probably wears his shoulder out. but yeah.
Hey, fair enough. Look, it's worked for him, hasn't it? At the end of the day, he's gone on and played for England. So
definitely, yeah.
Yeah, each to their own when it comes to that approach. Or moving on to our next one, James, another classic here on the Counter Cricket Podcast. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails? Who wouldn't you want to mess with necessarily?
A good one for this, obviously, you might not know him, but the physio, Dan George, you won't mess with Dan George. And then I don't know, like, in terms of, obviously, Grant Stewart is a big guy. I won't mess with him.
Italy's finest.
Yeah, I won't fancy myself against him. So yeah, I'd probably say, for people who listen to this who know Dan George, they'll know what I'm talking about, because you won't mess with him. But the players, I'd say, yeah, probably Grant. Yeah, I'd have to say Grant.
Fair enough. They'll both thank you for that as well. That's not a bad one to have. That shows that they're tough. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'll thank you for that later. Moving on to our next one then, James. This is becoming an instant classic. It's not necessarily, you know, made its way into our timeline just yet, but it's getting there. Yeah. It's getting there. It's becoming a classic. And that is, who's the most likely to get timed out during a game? Who's really slow getting the kit on?
I don't know who's slow. I don't know, just the only guy that I could ever imagine that happening to is Jordan Cox. Not that he's slowly getting his kit on, he's just, I don't know, he's just that sort of guy that you could see that happening.
Well, hopefully for Kent fans it won't happen, but...
Well, I suppose it's hard to get timed out when you open the batting.
That's very true. That is very true. Although we do have some stories here on the podcast. George Scrimshaw almost got timed out. In fact, this season... against Notts, I think it was, in the T20 Blast, because there's a massive walk from the pavilion at the Incora. And Charlie Thurston as well always gets brought up on the podcast. We need him on as a guest to confirm this, but apparently he will wait until there's one wicket until he walks out into the middle, and he's just wearing a thigh pad.
I'm the opposite. I need my kit on early. I need to relax.
Yeah, same here. But then again, it's the individuality of the game, isn't it? Each their own. We go back to that old adage here on the Counter Cricket Podcast. Moving on to our next one, James. You're going to have to throw at least someone under the bus here.
I hope they don't listen to the podcast.
And the reason why I say that is because this is the best and worst dressed. Who has some questionable fashion sense down in Kent?
So the perfect one for this. And I hope that if he does listen, he'll take it as a compliment, because I like what he wears, but it's different, and it's Tuanda Maye. He's got an out there wardrobe, which I rate it, but some of the stuff he wears, you won't see many of the lads in it, but like I say, I'm personally a fan of it, but yeah, it's just very out there.
And who would you say is the best?
The best dressed. Them two are like known as like the fashion. I'm talking about Nathan Gilchrist. So them two live together. So they're both like very into the fashion. I think Gilly's actually done like a fashion, not a degree, but I think he's got some sort of qualification. So them two, they're always making sure they're dressed right. So yeah, probably them two, the best and the worst in some people's eyes.
It's funny that they live together as well, isn't it?
they're made for each other, made to be roommates.
Yeah, I think that's ideal. To be fair, judging off that description. Moving on to our next one then, James. Our penultimate question on today's teammate segment, and that is, who's the dressing room joker? Who's always, you know, making people laugh, maybe pulling some pranks at the Spitfire ground?
So I've got two in line now. Probably Zach Crawley. He's a joker. He's always looking to pull a prank or something like that. Or he's got a few like he's tried a few. I don't even know how to describe them. Like riddles, something like that. And Joe Denley. I'd say them two. You keep an eye on them too.
Yeah, in fact, I think Denley definitely was. I'm trying to think if Crawley was here for this, and people will know if they've seen it. It was England, and they did the penguin, the celebration. Yeah. But I think those two were present. Denley definitely was. Denley had the best one, in my opinion. Him and Jason Roy.
Yeah, he's definitely a joker, Denley.
Yeah, the Denley meme team will like that as well. We do have a few of them tuned in.
Yeah, I've seen that Twitter. That's got a few laughs in the dressing room from time to time. You always see it. Some lad like has it on, and they're sharing a few of the lads.
As it should. Honestly, yeah. We have a good relationship here with the Denley meme team on the Cat Cricket podcast. In fact, one of our earlier episodes when we first found them, we actually gave them a little bit of praise. To be honest, we started reading out some of the memes and creativity, incredible, absolutely very incredible. Creative. So, yeah, for the Denley meme team, they'll enjoy the answer. And of course, Denley meme team, keep up the good work. I think that's what James is. Is suggesting definitely. Heading into 2022 and beyond. And James, our final question on today's podcast, and this really is a classic. This is almost the calling card of TCCP teammates at this point. And given the time of year, it's quite apt. So we're in November. We're getting towards the time when this TV show comes onto ITV. And that is, of course, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. So in the Kent dressing room, who do you think is the most likely to appear on I'm a Celeb?
I'd have to say Steve-O. He's the biggest celebrity in the dressing room. I think he'd have a good chance of winning it if he went on. I think a lot of people would get behind him because he's probably the most loved cricketer on the kite circuit. So I'd have to say him. I think he'd do all right on it. To be fair,
I think he'd win. To be completely honest, if we all came together as a county cricket collective, we could let Darren Stevens win. That'd be incredible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like every ground we go to play, like you'll always get a reaction, like coming out to bat, coming out to ball, no matter where we go. Like literally, everybody loves him.
Well, in fact, you were there on finals day, James.
Yeah,
obviously as part of the Kent team, but the reception he got at Edgbaston from neutrals as well. I mean, as soon as he came out to bat in both games, he got a massive reception and bowling as well. He bowled in the final, and it was as though like I don't know who had come on to bowl. Jimmy Anderson had come on to bowl.
Yeah,
or Brodie.
It's literally like that. Like everywhere we go, I'm not sure. Did you see the? A few of his, I think they're from his like local club team who were like dressed as him.
Yes, I did. And the flag as well.
Yeah. obviously he has so much support wherever we go, really. And it's deserved, really.
As he should. He's an absolute legend. And if I was in charge of Kent, he'd be getting at least a 10, 15-year contract extension. I don't want to see a county circuit without Darren Stevens in there at some capacity. I don't care if he's bowling 40-mile-an-hour dibbly dobblers, right? I don't care. Darren Stevens signed that contract extension. We want to see him play until at least 50, at least. But no, an absolute legend. And yeah, I think he'd win, to be honest. And James, I suppose, on the flip side of that, who wouldn't last the day? Who would say, I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here almost instantly?
I'd probably have to say, Tawanda. I'm close to Tawanda. He'll forgive me. He likes his nice things, I think. I don't know how we'd go on in there. I'll say Tawanda.
Well, I'll tell you what, we are planning on getting Tawanda on the podcast. So we'll ask him. I'll ask him how he seems, how he thinks he'll do. And I'll ask him the flip side. How will James Logan do?
Well, maybe he'll throw me under the bus after this, but...
Well, as I said, we'll look forward to that when we do eventually get Tawanda on. As I said, I do want to get him on. He follows us on Twitter as well, so Tawanda, if you are listening, we'll be in contact very, very shortly. But James, I think that is a wonderful place to wrap up what has been a brilliant podcast. If you can't tell, I've absolutely loved it. I think it's been great, nice way to spend the last hour. So before we say our goodbyes, I suppose, and wrap up today's episode, Do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, Instagrams, Twitters, websites, whatever?
No, not really. I've got a little side business with my friends.
Go on.
It's called, we like buy and sell like older football boots, and it's the Instagram handle is soccer_supplier_, I think. Let me just check it. So yeah, we've been doing that for like the last year, and yeah, I enjoy it because I'm quite a big football fan, so it's good, to be fair.
Fair enough, James. You know what? We'll leave the link to that and your Twitter account in the podcast. That is TCCP Tradition. We always leave the Twitter and or the Instagram, depending on, you know, what our guests have. But all that's left for me to say, James, is thank you very much for today. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're always welcome back here on the Cows Cricket Podcast in the future. And that's fantastic here as well. Thank you very much, James. And obviously to all of our wonderful listeners out there as well, thank you to each and every single one of you who tunes in every week. We really do appreciate it here on the podcast. Remember to keep on tuning in. We've got plenty more guests, plenty more wrap-up shows to keep you entertained during these dark winter months as we head into the 2022 county cricket season. But that is it from myself and James Logan for today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. As always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.